If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
28 minutes after 7 o'clock, you're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. As you can imagine, these are the kind of conversations that I thoroughly. Truth is, we all learn along the way. A moment ago, we spoke about the leadership changes that are taking place within the big banks in South Africa. And of course, just an understanding of the succession planning and shifting typically take place. Well, a good friend of mine has sent a text and said, I'll buy a bank and make you CEO. Oh boy. Let's see how that goes. It goes to understand the compliance dynamics there, but it's not impossible. Speaking of compliance, that also speaks to how these banks earn their revenue, make their profit, and most importantly, keep customers like you and I happy with their service delivery, but also as investors who have our pension funds within these institutions, that we also make sure that they are happy with the outcomes of the numbers. And that speaks to key metrics that we typically look at, like return on equity, headline earnings per share, and of course, credit loss ratio, which play a critical role in the evaluation of a company, specifically a bank's earnings. Someone who has put in the work together with their team to give us a quick overview and synopsis of how banks essentially in South Africa have been performing is Rivaan Rupnarain, PwC South Africa Banking and Capital Markets Partner, to help us take a look at what we see in terms of the earnings of the Green Bank, the Red Bank, the Turquoise Bank, and of course, the banks overall in South Africa in terms of their performance, the Blue Bank. Rivaan, such a pleasure to have you with us, and thank you for your time.
Good evening to you and the listeners, Gugu, and thank you very much for having me.
Always excited to speak to you because I can imagine there's plenty numbers that you had to go through as your team. And given that you do this every year, you've been able to monitor, I guess, the trend and the shifts that take place in some of the key metrics. Maybe let's just start there, starting off on a very technical base when it comes to the key metrics and how they've shifted in the last financial year.
Gugu, as always, when we look at banking results, we like to place them within the context of the broader environment in which those results were achieved. Now, if you look at 2024, what we had was a first half that was fraught with quite a bit of uncertainty, and that was largely as a result of elections across several countries, including, of course, in South Africa. And that really played out with a sense of wait and see in terms of corporates making investment decisions and just economic activity more broadly. Of course, we then had the electoral process running its course quite efficiently in South Africa. We saw the swift formation of a government of national unity. And with that, we saw some really promising signs in terms of some of our more structural issues in South Africa starting to abate. For example, limited load shedding. We saw some logistics constraints in ports and rail being lifted. We saw inflation moderating to below the SARB's target band at some point in the second half. So that really, you know, at a high level, sets the scene for this set of major banks' results, a tale of two halves, as it were. And with that as background, we think that South Africa's major banks delivered a really resilient performance in FY24, and that's reflected across a range of measures. For example, if you look at balance sheets of these banks, they continue to grow, both on the funding side. We see deposits up just under 9%. On the lending side, we see loans and advances growing around 5.5%. So that tells you that consumer appetite for banking services was very much still there. We then saw, if we turn to the income statement, good top-line growth, continued revenue momentum across both interest income and non-interest revenue, translating into operating income growing just over 4%. We saw, importantly, really strong contributions in local currency terms from the major banks' operations in the rest of Africa outside South Africa. Mm. That was offset to some extent by currency volatility when you translate those results back into rands. Yep. And all of that gave rise to a combined average return on equity of 17.5%, which is enviable by any global banking standards. And that really forms the basis for why we say we think this is a resilient financial performance.
Yeah. Maybe let's just zone into a return on equity for a second. As we know, most South African banks have been able to perform or deliver double-digit growth in terms of return on equity. And from what we understand, this has a lot to do with perhaps the regulatory environment in South Africa, which also speaks to capital adequacy. Contextualize that for me as the average man on the street to fully understand why these metrics matter, and perhaps how they provide clarity as to how competitive our local banks are in comparison to our global peers. I mean, just 2 years ago, we were hearing of banks shutting down in the US, right?
Absolutely. I think you've hit the nail on the head. When we talk about return on equity, I think there's two important components that are relevant for us as consumers, or users of financial services, and for the economic system more broadly. The first, of course, is earnings. And as we mentioned, we saw very good earnings growth in this period being delivered by the bank. But importantly, the return on equity is around how one deploys its capital. And South Africa has got a long-standing history of a very sound regulator, which adopts international regulatory standards that impose requirements around capital adequacy, liquidity adequacy,
yes,
and has always followed international best practice to a very high degree. If we look at those ratios, South Africa's major banks continue to remain well-capitalized, liquid, above regulatory minima. So they are striking the balance appropriately in terms of, on the one side, building sound, prudent balance sheets that comply with these metrics, but on the other side, delivering earnings as a result of their strategic focus. So overall, I think the ROE story for South African banks is a really good one, Gugu. Mm,
definitely. Let's also talk credit loss ratio, specifically when it does come to the environment, when we look at the retail and business banking. As we know, that's also largely fluctuates depending on the economic environment and where interest rates might be and the pressure on consumers. Help us understand the performance and the shifts we've been seeing here and what it might be indicative of in terms of our banking behavior.
Yeah, so I think the first thing is we saw credit quality improving, particularly in retail banking in South Africa, as you say. If one looks at the income statement of these four banks and puts them together, what you see is credit impairment charges have decreased around 6% if you compare against December 23. That led to the credit loss ratio, which is a key measure that analysts pay attention to, falling to 89 basis points. That number was 102 basis points in December 2023. And that fall in credit loss ratio is driven by a combination of factors, some of which include credit models that do a good job of anticipating the interest rate outlook that permeated over 2024. We saw some longstanding non-performing loans, particularly in the corporate and investment banking businesses, being worked out or restructured. We saw improving credit trends in South Africa, particularly towards the end of the second half as inflation started to come down. And we saw some of the large sovereign credit impairments that were evident in the previous period either did not recur or the impact was much smaller. So overall, you see that the credit loss ratio is quite well within the through-the-cycle target range that bank CEOs talk about, which is between 70 to 100 basis points at 89 for December 2024.
Mm. What was so interesting about our previous conversation with Andrew Woodburn, a leader specifically when it comes to executive appointments as well as succession planning within corporate institutions, was the fact that he spoke about the leadership of the institution typically drives the strategy, and the strategy differs depending on where the business might be in terms of growth. And what stuck out for me in your report was digital transformation and efficiency. And as I sit here, there are a lot more younger banks who have come on board in terms of technology and driving the key enabler. But the big four banks in themselves, over the last few company results, have mentioned the significant amounts of capital they've allocated to ensure that they drive efficacy in terms of technology. Help us contextualize what that means and why this remains critical, especially for us as end users in terms of their systems.
Absolutely. And I think the digitization journey that South Africa's major banks have been on is not a new one. It's been a path that they've been on for quite some time. You know, first and foremost, Gugu, it's about enhancing customer experience. The days of large volume transactions passing through the physical channels, the branches, I think is behind us. What we see these days is a lot more transaction processing happening on digital channels, whether that's online through the website or on mobile applications as well. The volume of transactions that customers make use of digitally has clearly shifted, and we think that trend will continue. What we see more recently from the major banks is that they talk about continuing to confidently explore the potential of emerging technologies, things like generative artificial intelligence. And there's a number of use cases here. First of all, it's around enhancing operational efficiency, making the back office leaner. It's about enhancing risk management processes. And it's about enhancing customer experiences across a wide variety of use cases. Mm. So this is consistent with what we've observed globally within the banking industry, that those banks that harness the power of data, of emerging technology, and pair that with highly qualified people are really the ones that are transforming their operations. They are elevating customer experiences, And in many ways, they are exceeding stakeholder expectations, just as our banks in South Africa are doing.
I find this so exciting, but I think I do want to make it make sense for all of us as South Africans who take out our cards, you know, swipe and interact with many of these banks and platforms, whether at a lending rate or perhaps in terms of transactional banking and many other options that they typically provide. But let's talk about the competitiveness in terms of retail and CIB. And I think this also speaks to the macroeconomic climate. Does this have a bearing sometimes in terms of the seasonality of the performance of some of the banks?
It does, Gugu. I mean, we make the point in our press release that if you look at the number of customers that are now digitally active, as the banks call them, you're looking at around 21 million in South Africa. Now, to put that into context, that is about a third of the population. So clearly, the digital advantage is real, because if you make banking access to banking services easier, the ability to open accounts, the ability to transact, the ability to remit funds easier for customers without having branches, what you see is that generates customer loyalty with banks. It generates opening of more accounts, and it generates what the banks describe as cross-sell. Between financial services that they provide, including to some extent insurance products that the banks offer. So to answer your question directly, absolutely, it's an advantage. And it's a competitive advantage made more real by the fact that, as you alluded to, we have digital entrants that have been penetrating the South African retail banking market who are entirely branchless. And so the major banks are alive to that. They are nothing if not competitive, and they are responding with the scale of their balance sheets to deal with these shifting dynamics.
Definitely. Rivan, to close off with, I guess it's important for us to also take a look at the outlook. Not only do we see the banks have all commented that we're well capacitated to get off the FATF, Financial Action Task Force grey listing, interest rates, you know, might see shallow cuts going forward. And of course, economic growth remains a key factor, which is still slightly muted in terms of our economic activity in South Africa. So overall, what does that mean for the expected performance of banks in the short to medium term?
Yeah, Gugu, I think as you heard some of the CEOs say to you in recent weeks, if you look macro, clearly geopolitical tensions have risen in recent times. There's no doubt that that's driven in large part by political contestation going on in the world's largest economy, the US. What does geopolitical volatility give rise to? It gives rise to elevated levels of uncertainty. And of course, corporate activity, financial markets, business confidence dislike uncertainty. So that's the context of the current environment as we look ahead. What do our banks do when faced with uncertainty? In many ways, they do what they have shown themselves through prior episodes of uncertainty to do well. And that is to model a range of scenarios, probability weight those scenarios based on data and relevant information, and then position their businesses and take actions accordingly to navigate through those changes, ultimately to preserve their strategic areas of focus. What we see as 2025 unfolds is that South Africa's major banks will likely remain focused on the dual priorities of navigating this challenging environment that I talk about, but at the same time, capturing appropriate opportunities both in South Africa and on the rest of the continent where they are decidedly pan-African in their outlook. So overall, I would say it's an exciting time for banking in the country.
Oh, it definitely is, especially on the back of the leadership changes we've heard this morning. I know that's not part of your report, but I just thought I'd entice you, Rivan. Thank you again for your time this evening, sir.
Thank you very much, Gugu.
Thank you. Rivan Rupnarain, who's the PwC South Africa Banking and Capital Markets Partner, helping us paint a clear picture on the assessment of the financial results we've seen from the major banks in South Africa and looking at the key metrics, return on equity, headline earnings per share, credit loss ratios, and of course, the equity tier. All key metrics that we look at to evaluate the performance of banks and financial services companies in South Africa.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.